Education in our schools is more than reading, writing, and arithmetic. It also encompasses speech and language assistance. Meet Carly Ratley, who's passionate about helping children reach their potential. Welcome to the show, Carly.
Thank you.
Glad to have you here. I've talked to a lot of teachers, principals, have not talked to a speech therapist. Speech therapist or pathologist, what's the appropriate term?
You can call it speech therapist, speech language pathologist, speech pathologist, SLP.
Okay.
There's all kinds of names.
Okay. And I know that we get a lot of requests. It's one of the programs we
really
don't have at Tech. And we have a lot of students who, in either incoming students or current teachers who say, have you got a program yet?
That's
for
great.
Speech pathology, speech therapy is what they usually ask, mm-hmm. and we don't.
Right.
It seems like a lot of times we see that more at a school who has a medical. It seems
yes.
more common at a school with a medical program of some sort, but it's just not something we have.
No, and there's definitely a need, especially in our areas. There's definitely a need for those programs.
Mm-hmm. So starting out, so let's start. Tell me a little bit about yourself.
Okay.
Where you work, as we were talking off air, it's a lot of different layers.
There's
there.
There's a lot of layers.
So talk
yes.
us through what that looks like and how you got into that in the first
okay.
place.
Okay. So I own a practice in McMinnville right down the road called the Voice Box. So role there, owner, speech, language pathologist, we see primarily pediatrics. So anywhere from birth to college age, we do see a handful of adults in there, but very small practice. It's me and two other SLPs. We get a lot of students, graduate and undergraduate students that come through and do clinicals or observation. So I'm there, and we also do contracts with school systems and preschools. So sometimes we're out in the rain, like got my mm-hmm. rain jacket today, out in the rain, going and doing those visits as well. And then I'm also teaching at Middle Tennessee State University. I've been an adjunct there teaching in the speech pathology and audiology department, but recently have come on there full time. And so do some courses there to undergraduate students.
Okay. So you're balancing a lot.
I am.
Yeah. So with... And this is just what I don't know mm-hmm. About the way it exists. I've just never encountered the services. And I know that that's a lot of times people don't know how it works or the
right.
layers until they need it.
Mm-hmm.
So are there typically, like in a larger school system, would there be a full-time speech
typically,
therapy
yes.
person?
Yes. The challenge in our areas, I mean, even including McMinnville, of course, we're a little bit bigger of an area when you compare it to somewhere like Van Buren or Grundy County or places like that. The challenge becomes that it's harder to find SLPs in those areas. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of these school districts have to contract, which is what we're doing in our office. They have to contract looking for SLPs, hire travel agencies, those kind of things. That's the one thing I can say about, I've been doing this for 20 years. And, when I went to school, I recognized in my program, even the challenges working in rural areas, it's different. And then the flip side of that is just the lack of service and these kids, that go without, you know,
mm-hmm.
and so, definitely something that I would love to see fixed,
mm-hmm.
you know, in my career time
mm-hmm.
before I, you know, retire,
yes.
I'm done, but.
Yes. And I imagine that in a, just like any other service in a rural area, it is hard to find,
mm-hmm.
but it's also something that being in education, I know that it's not something that's a one and done.
Right.
It's something that you need regularly
right.
to really have movement with a student. So it's not like you're just like
popping
eyeglasses
in.
Where you just pop in and you get a prescription filled
right.
and here's your glasses. I'll see you in a year. That's, you know, that to me with speech therapy is something that, I mean, it could take 2 years to
absolutely.
Get a student to make traction.
2+ years, you know, especially the more complex the medical situation or, you know, with that child, not even necessarily does there need to be a medical diagnosis. Sometimes it's just the complexity of the environment or the exposure, the lack of exposure, those kind of things. And so, you know, when I, when we're in a rehab setting, so working with adults in a more medical setting, speech therapy typically is lumped in with physical and occupational therapy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, on that end of the spectrum, you know, our caseloads tend to be a little bit smaller. We're working more with swallowing and feeding and cognition and those kind of things. On the flip side of the spectrum with adults or with children, it's more, you know, academic based type things that there might be needs for, whether it's speaking, you know, that's kind of the given. That's the one that most people are aware of when you mm-hmm. say speech therapy, mm-hmm. it's the speaking. But it goes beyond that, you know, with the different language components, understanding what's being said, how to grammatically use their speech in the correct forms. And even, you know, with kids, we can work with feeding and swallowing. And so there's just so many different things that we can do with working with kids. And a lot of times we're with them, you know, for quite some time. Mm-hmm. I've seen children that I've had since they were 2 or 3 years old, and now they're in high school or, you know, beyond. And so you tend to, you know, these kids that need it, a lot of times they are in for the long haul, mm-hmm. you know, with a lot of needs. And so,
mm-hmm. yeah. And it's a long term. It's a long, yes. definitely a yes. long, a long game mm-hmm. with a program like that. So, and I want to dig into that just a little bit more in our time, but I want to back up and ask you one of the questions I ask everybody, and you've had some time to think about it, about your classroom experience going mm-hmm. back. And so as you were coming through, who was your favorite teacher? And it could be K-12, it could be college, anywhere along the way.
Well, Dr. Rebecca Fisher, and she actually was still teaching at MTSU up until a year ago. She retired, and she had a huge impact on me. When I got into this field, actually, my background is in broadcasting.
Okay.
My degree was in mass communications from MTSU. I was working in radio and TV.
So you're right at home here,
yes,
in, here
a little
in the studio.
Bit, a little bit. It's yeah. been a while. But when I decided to go back to school, I had reached out to a professor at MTSU that had an impact on me in the communication world, and had told him that I want to go back and get my master's, wasn't really sure what I wanted to do. The joke was a master's in radio, like, what are you going to do with that? You know, and so he had me really think about what I enjoyed about communications. And so it really ended up being that I've thought about voice and diction and impairments and all these things. And he set me up with Dr. Fisher, and she was the one that introduced me to speech pathology. And so kind of got me on that road to that. But on a personal side too. So when I had gone back to start that journey, I was about 3 months in and was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma. And thought that I was going to quit. I thought, well, I need to just kind of go home and focus on my health now mm-hmm. and, you know, not go any further. And she was a cancer survivor herself. And so she really mentored me through it, really encouraged me and pushed me to keep going. And so I have her, I owe her a lot, you know, to just not only my career that I stuck with it and now so many years out, I love what I do, and I've been very blessed by what I do. And, but also on a personal side, she almost became family to me. Mm-hmm. Just, I always felt like she was in my corner. And so, mm-hmm. and I think that's what a teacher, you know, that's nice when you have those teachers that make that kind of impact on your life. And so she definitely did.
Yeah. And it's fun to hear, and, you know, you fast forward into your career mm-hmm. now, and,
right.
and I'm sure that you find yourself doing things that she did or saying
yes.
things that she said,
yes.
Having that influence so far down the road.
Yes. When I, when MTSU had reached out to me about being an adjunct with them. And so I went in one semester and taught a course, and I kind of had this moment when I was walking in and she was still there and mm-hmm. she met me at the in the hallway, and she actually walked me to the classroom and she sat in on my very first lecture. And I get goosebumps thinking about it. It was just a cool moment. And I thought about that. I'm like, if it wasn't for her, I don't know if I would be standing here right now. And just, again, all the things, all the opportunities. I always kind of feel like she's been a part of those opportunities. And so she's had faith in me when I wasn't too sure about it. And so.
Yeah. And you get that opportunity because to me, what you do in so many ways is just like being a teacher.
Yes.
And because you have to be that encourager that stable person that's throughout the education career, but then you also get that reward.
Yes.
I would say, possibly another field, you've got the work, you put the work in, but maybe you don't have that child at the end of that year who has accomplished these things. And that part is so rewarding.
Mm-hmm. It is. And going back to kind of talking about teachers that make an impact, I grew up with teachers all around me. My mom was a special ed teacher for 33 years. My grandmother was a teacher. I have aunts that are teachers. And, growing up, that was not anything that I set out. If anything, it was kind of the opposite. Mm-hmm. I just thought there's no way I could do this. You know, I looked at these people that I looked up to and I thought there's no way. And my mom, what she did as a special ed teacher, I just was amazed and thought, there's no way I could do that. And so, thinking about all that now, I'm just like, how did I end up here? Because not anything that I thought I could ever do.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and it's, when it's in the family, it's hard to run. You can't really run from it.
Right.
I mean, many of the conversations I have are family. I mean, my dad, they'll say my dad was a teacher, my mom was a teacher. I mean, there's always those teachers and you do see it and it does pull you in.
So, right.
We're going to take a short break. So I'll ask the listeners to listen in to learn more from Carly Ratley of the Voice Box when we come back. Thank you. Welcome back. Talking to Miss Carly Ratley from the Voice Box in McMinnville. So speech therapy, speech pathology, Lots of different hats, now adjunct instructor. So I imagine that part, being an adjunct instructor, is kind of fun because you're not just helping an individual student, but now you're helping 30 people who are going to help individual students.
Right.
And so I know that a lot of times when I teach class, it's like I wanted to get that one more really good nugget, learn this really good thing. It's like you don't even want to leave class. It's like, I just need to get you this one more thing. So you're going to be prepared when you get out there. So have you enjoyed that switch into that role?
Yes, absolutely. How I even transitioned into that, working in kind of the medical setting, working in private practice, we get a lot of students that come through, undergraduate, graduate students, various, levels of where they're at in their clinical experience. And I found really quickly that I enjoyed that. And, thinking about the evolution of my career and, okay, what other things do I want to try? That was something I thought, okay, well, I enjoy working with these students. What you were saying, I can kind of pass on some things and just kind of watch how they continue to help, multiple people. And I've loved it. And so I started taking students into our clinic and got a little bit of a taste of that. And like I said, MTSU had reached out. I'd taken some of their students and being alumni. And so they had reached out and taught that first course and caught the bug. And so it's been very rewarding. Like I said, very unexpected, how much I've really enjoyed it.
So are all the students in a speech therapy program or are there different programs that take the class kind of like because I could imagine we don't have this in our licensure programs, but having a portion of a speech therapy, speech pathology course, just as an informational, kind of like we do with an ESL course or a technology course, to me, it's valuable, valuable information for, for teachers to have, right, or for, you know, for people in the profession?
Well, I actually teach a course in the education department as well, at MTSU. It's childhood language and speech development.
Okay.
So just like you're saying, mm-hmm. That's something that their program, they've had their speech pathology professors or lecturers come in and teach those courses. And I'll admit, going into that, I thought this is going to be a challenge because these are not SLPs. And I was so used to the disorder and mm-hmm. the impairment side of it, but just teaching, stripping it back and just teaching the normal, mm-hmm. you know, and thinking more like, okay, what's the normal development? But it's been great again. And, you know, one of the things that I've been able to see and realize, you know, practicing an SLP and then just teaching, have an opportunity to teach these students, is how important for them this information is going to be when they get into the classroom and they get their students, you know, the way students and classrooms work now, you know, it's very inclusive. Mm-hmm. And so, which is a great thing. But, you know, one thing I would hear from the past, even working before I started teaching, but working with teachers, they would say, I just don't feel prepared. I don't feel like I've got the information on how to work with these students with special needs or, you know, need certain kind of accommodations or modifications. And so, now that I'm able to teach that, it's great knowing that, like, okay, I've seen it real world and the challenges that teachers face and, you know, having the information and knowing what to do. And so it's been really good.
And it can be tough for a classroom teacher, mm-hmm. you know, to, because you don't have a lot of students. So, right. you know, you have a class of 20. If you have one student with speech problems or a student with visual disability, you don't have enough experience.
Right.
You lean really heavily on exactly. someone else that's mm-hmm. the expert, but still at the end of the day, you're most likely you're closing the door and you're working with that student and 19 others
right.
or 20 others, you know, to work through. So I can see that how beneficial it would be to have that expertise.
I think so. And you know what? And I just think, we've evolved so much on the medical side and just what we understand and what we know. And I know in my field, we really have evolved and it's been great. And so now it's like, okay, we've got all this useful information. What do we do with it?
Mm-hmm.
And going back to teachers in the classroom, we've got all this information. Well, how do we apply it? And I think that's what I've seen. Like they have all the information they understand, but I need somebody to help guide me and how to apply this. Because you're right. A classroom of 20 students, you know, various degrees of learning styles and, you know, where they come from, what they've been exposed mm-hmm. to, all those different things. And so, you know, in a perfect world, yes, we would all learn the same way and mm-hmm. we'd all have the same background, but that's just not what it is. And so, you know, it is exciting that I can be a part of that or help, you mm-hmm. know, with that. And so.
Well, speaking of challenges, so that makes me think about speech development, mm-hmm. which is amazing. I mean, there's a science. I mean,
right.
the field, I haven't studied the field. So, it's different for me because I haven't spent time in it. What about today's children and today's, you know, I think back compared to when I was in school many years ago in the elementary, you know, I didn't have technology at the time.
Right.
So how does that impact? And you know, I knew some students that left the classroom and they went to speech therapy, mm-hmm. And we understood that. In terms of development, how have you seen technology impact, good or bad, that those who have speech issues?
I think there is a good and bad with it. I think good, I mean, the access, you know, there's so much access out there to ways to help students that, you know, struggle with communication. For example, AAC devices, alternative augmentative communication devices. So just, again, in my time, my career, I've seen the progression with that. The invention of iPads and tablets and things like that, that when I first started out, we didn't have those. Now you can download an app and, you know, the child can use that to communicate. So mm-hmm. all those things are great. And, you know, and I love to see the advancement and just giving parents those options for tools and communication. Of course, there's all different sorts of ways to communicate, and that's just one. But again, it's a great one. But on the flip side of that, so like negative wise, you know, it's really, and I'm just as guilty, you know, we have the access. So again, you know, the easy access, and it's just very easy to pick up my phone, you know, and just scroll through and not pay attention to my surroundings. Or, you know, I don't have any young children at home anymore, but I could see if I had young children, how easy it would be not to be interacting with them as much, or down in the floor and playing with them. And so, what I have seen working with early intervention, birth to three, is that, you know, having to just educate parents on, okay, let's learn how to play. And you would think, oh, I assume everyone knows how to play, but not necessarily anymore. And I think a lot of that is because of the technology, distractions, things like that. So those are definite challenges that we have to overcome.
And to me, again, having been in school a few years ago, I feel like we have a totally different perspective on it than those who, you know, who've always had it,
right?
You know, it's always been there. So, well, let's take a short break, and then we'll come back and talk through a few more things about what's going on with you in the future.
Okay.
Welcome back to Local Matters, talking to Ms. Carly Ratley, a speech therapist, about some of the things that she does day to day. I appreciate you coming out to talk with us.
Yes.
We didn't get to a lot of my questions yet, but it's been good conversations. So one of the things that I have, one of my notes, is to ask about supporting classrooms in general. So if you do go to a school, so I know there's several different ways that you approach this. And again, as an outsider, I haven't had the experiences. And I think part of what I'm interested to know is, you know, what if I have a grandchild. What if my grandchild needs speech therapy? I mean, I wouldn't even know where to start.
Right.
I would call. I'm connected enough that I would call someone at the school system and say, "Hey, this is, you know, I need this service." So what does that look like? And do you go to the schools, or do they always come to you? I don't even know what
Not
the process looks like.
So in private practice, yes, they come to us. That looks like an outpatient clinic. But in the school, so if a family came in, parents had concerns for their student with speech or language, and it hadn't been caught yet, or it hadn't been noted by a teacher, you know, hopefully, I always say, you know, hopefully we're catching it. So, like, you know, there's kindergarten screenings, there's preschool screenings. Most districts are doing these things. And a part of those screenings, we're hoping to catch these things. Because, of course, they can impact academics.
Sure.
But on the flip side, if we've kind of gotten down the road and nobody's noted it yet and a parent is concerned, they definitely can reach out to their teacher, reach out to the school. The school then would turn around and get the SLP or speech therapist to come in, either do a screener or get more information, reach out to the parent or talk to the teacher. And then if there looks like there might be a need for testing, the SLP then would reach out to the family to get permission first. That's, I think, I don't know if it's a misunderstanding or just people aren't aware of the process, but for SLPs in the schools, they cannot work with a student without having the proper paperwork in place or documents in place. And a part of that is they have to get the parents' permission. There has to be meetings. That's where those IEPs come in to play. And so a student is not going to receive services without all of that in place first. And it starts with the speech therapist reaching out to the family and getting permission to test. And then bringing the family back in to discuss that. And so that's really, I always suggest to families where to start. If you have a concern, reach out to your school. First and foremost, you know, reach out to your teacher and make sure that they're aware and can help guide you with that. I know a lot of times parents don't have direct access with the speech therapist that's coming into their school, especially if it's an SLP that doesn't work directly with the school system, or it's an SLP that's going to multiple schools. And so I always suggest we'll start with your teacher first and see if you can get them to help guide you with that.
And it's funny to think that, because I'm a big advocate of public schools and help, but there are parents who might be offended
Right.
To think that Absolutely. Someone's going to offer services Yes. to their child. Well, my child doesn't need that. I mean, Right. And that's, I know from where you are, that's frustrating to hear Mm-hmm. When it's obvious to you as a professional that that kid could use some help. How do you, and I know this is a complicated question, but how do you kind of diagnose and decide that there's an issue that's severe enough to warrant services versus just something developmental that
Right.
That's got to be a hard distinction.
It is. It is. Well, and in the schools, it all goes back to how it impacts education. Mm. So if it's impacting them academically, then, you know, there you go. So mm-hmm. we need to look at that mm-hmm. and, you know, right away. And for the most part, I understand some families could be a little standoffish with that. Well, I don't want them to receive special education services, or I don't want there to be a label. You know, we can hear that quite a bit. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times it's just, they need more information. They need to understand, you know, mm-hmm. what you're trying to say or what you're trying to do to help. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times it's just something as simple as, well, it could affect them in the classroom. It could affect their grades. Mm-hmm. It could affect their reading, you know, them communicating with peers, mm-hmm. you know, getting made fun of, mm-hmm. those kind of things. And a lot of times, you know, families are very understanding to that and understand that.
Yes.
It can be challenging.
I imagine so. And challenging today for a number of reasons.
Right.
I mean, just
right.
in general, I think it can be a struggle. One of the notes that I had was related to ELL, the ELL population. Mm-hmm. To me, it's an extra layer of
it is.
Difficulty. And I'm sure you probably have some interactions in McMinnville. And I wonder how difficult that is to take someone who's really legitimately trying to learn the language, mm-hmm. but then on top of that, there's a speech issue.
Right.
What does that look like?
It's very hard, you know, to navigate that. I think all SLPs say that's pretty challenging. You know, for me, I look at it, you know, I'm not there to change a dialect, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. That's something I always, you know, sometimes there's a discussion with teachers if they say, I don't understand this student. They have a very thick dialect, and mm-hmm. I have to remind them, well, that's not an impairment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that doesn't mm-hmm. indicate an impairment. You know, and two, if, you know, we have to look at their first language, if there's mm-hmm. no issues in that first language, and it could be more of a challenge learning that second language, well, that doesn't indicate an impairment, mm-hmm. you know, and so you really have to kind of break it down that far. And also respect that,
sure,
you know,
sure.
I mean, I'm pretty country,
yeah,
and I don't
yeah.
want anybody coming, you know, right. and saying, okay, I don't understand you because you're thick country accent.
Yes,
so
yes.
Doesn't mean I have an impairment. It just means that's
right.
a part of who I am, and it creates my personality and those kind of things. So
yeah, we had that conversation. We presented at we were at a technology conference in mm-hmm. Florida, and it was a big room, and I do make an attempt to slow down, especially in a professional setting, to
right.
slow down and not say some of the things that I say sometimes. And, you know, I make an effort. And someone at the end of the session came up and said, I couldn't understand anything you said. And I thought, well, you know, I understand that I have a Southern
right.
accent, but it's not, you know, I didn't think it was that thick. And I was even making an effort to do that. But then I think if you get into, I could imagine, so, you know, in Warren County, probably mainly one additional language, but
right.
if you get into a school system like
oh, yeah.
Metro, where you might have eight different
Absolutely.
Languages in a classroom, you know, first languages, and people are, you know, they're trying to learn English, I could see where it would be very challenging.
Yes. Well, and I do think SLPs that have backgrounds in multiple languages, I do think that's beneficial. It's a lot harder to find in rural areas,
mm-hmm.
of
mm-hmm.
course. But you know, going back to, it's just one of those things you just have to remind people, you know, that there is actually, there is a type of therapy for dialect, you know, and that's kind of more in the voice area. So,
okay.
I've worked with professors before that, you know, had very thick accents and were mm-hmm. trying to, you know, they would say, well, my students have a hard time understanding me. Well, that's a completely different, you know,
sure.
type of speech therapy that kind of falls more in the voice and diction. But when it comes to working with these students, you know, in the school setting, it's just something different.
Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm. I would believe it. I would believe it. So over the time, so you've been in it for several years.
Mm-hmm.
What have you seen in terms of changes to what you do? Because I could see some of it being the same.
Right.
You know, but I'm sure there have been things that have evolved over
changes.
The years.
Yes. I mean, technology is a big one. You know, whenever I first got out, there wasn't tablets. There weren't all these things. I mean, we, of course, had cell phones, but, you know.
They were flip phones.
They were flip phones.
But they were still cell phones, yes.
More dial-up and that kind of thing. Uh-huh. But so that's definitely been a challenge. And like I said, I think whenever the iPads and tablets and all those things came out in our field, we were leaning into it big time because we recognized the access and all the things you could do with it. Well, it seems like we've shifted that almost, and now we're trying to kind of get out of that because it's almost gone too far. Yeah. And like I was telling you before, it's, you know, we're getting down to we're teaching parents how to play, you know, with their children, or play is just as important, you know, in communication. Mm-hmm. Like play, that's one of the foundational skills. And, you know, and we take that for granted, you know, that our kids just need to be playing. You know, it's that old story of, you know, when it's Christmas and someone's home and they have a toddler or an infant and they just want to play with the paper in the box and all that. Well, that's it. You know, it's as simple as that. Kids are wired to play and they don't need all the fancy things. And so that's definitely been a change. And I think the other thing, I mean, I do remember early on in my career, there was a lot of talk about this functional style of therapy. But I've really seen it evolve, and we really have gotten more into functional. It's not just about creating goals and things that we want to work on that are not specific for that client or maybe even student. It's making it more functional to their life and, you know, more appropriate,
much more,
I guess.
Personalized.
Yes. And, and that's, again, that's a great thing, you know, instead of just – my example always when I talk to students about it, this is kind of extreme, but like working with an adult or, you know, someone my age writing checks. Well, are they writing checks anymore? Are they using their debit card? You know, that may not be something that they need to work on because it's just not functional for them. So
sure. Or I could see having a curriculum, you know, and trying to use the same curriculum for everybody. We're going to get
yes.
through these 10
yes.
steps. But then the students being in completely different places as right. as you come in.
Well, even how we assess students looks a little bit different. You know, we use a lot of standardized tests like everybody else. And, you know, when you start looking at how it was standardized, well, was it standardized for that population? You know, and I think once upon a time we were using these standardized tests for everybody, you know, and we've learned that, well, these tests haven't been standardized for certain populations,
sure.
and it might not be appropriate to be doing that. And so,
sure. So, well, it's come a long way, certainly.
Yes.
And
yes.
I'm glad to talk to you because it's not anything. Again, we don't have the program, and so I haven't had coursework specifically on it. So it's very interesting to hear. And I'm sure that if there are parents listening who have questions, they could reach out.
Absolutely.
First line of defense would be their local school.
Yes.
To have those conversations. Yes. So, but I appreciate you coming out and talking to
thank
us today.
Thank you. I really appreciate being here.
Yeah. Thank you.